Okay. Before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly book, it's page 234, top of the page, the section Projection versus Extension. If you're in the second edition, it's page 193, paragraph 3, and there is no section heading. If you're in the first edition, it's page 179, third paragraph. And if you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 98, the section Projection versus Extension. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Good afternoon. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. We've been talking the last few weeks about having false gods, in so many words. We've talked about the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and the second, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything in the heavens above, the earth beneath, or the waters under the earth. And I've been homing in on the word likeness, because the ego, or from the ego frame of reference, you look at God, which means you look at anything that you can see, and you say, that's an elderly lady, that's a fat woman, that's a young person, inexperienced, that's a beautiful person. And as you do that and you apply a definition to what you're looking at, you are creating a likeness. And if you believe what you're saying, you serve that likeness. You behave on the basis of that likeness. Put simply, a false god or a likeness of God is any definition you apply to anything. But specifically, it's any definition that you apply to God that calls it something other than God. Those first two commandments lay the groundwork for being awake. Have only one God, and don't make any likenesses of that God. Don't make up definitions for what God is being, and then serve those definitions, because when you do, you are not serving God, and you're also not fulfilling your function. What is your function? The Course uses the word co-creation, and everyone would love to be a co-creator with God. It's very egotistically satisfying to think of having such a capacity. But to co-create with God is to be that point, that movement, that act of acknowledging God in what you're seeing. And I'll tell you, when you look at your neighbor and you say, wow, she's a real bitch. You're not acknowledging God. And you're not co-creating with God. You're engaged in nothing, an act that is empty. And in the absence of your ability or willingness to see God there, you've divorced yourself, separated yourself from God. And as I said, you're not fulfilling your function, which is to be seeing God there and to have no other wish on your mind except to stand in awe of God. God treasures your attention, but you withhold your attention from Him when you look at each other or you look at anything and you give it a different definition and choose to honor that definition. So you've withdrawn your attention from God and you've given it to the definition that you prefer to apply to that aspect of God, we'll say. This application of a definition to the presence of God is the meaning of the word projection. It's that simple. You don't have to get into deep psychological explanations. Now, it's very important to understand that the lady that you've described as beautiful, or the lady that you've described as elderly, or the gentleman that you've described as fat, is not a projection. What you've called them is a projection, but what you're seeing is not. The world is not a projection of your ego. And the world and universe will not disappear when you stop projecting your private personal definitions upon them. What will happen when you stop applying your definition to these things is that in the absence of the noise, the static of your thinking processes, what everything is will have an opportunity to register with you, because you won't be making noise that you distract yourself from reality with. Now, some of the definitions you govern yourselves by, we'll say, did not originate with you. Some of them originated with your parents or those you accepted as your teachers in one way or another. And so a loving parent might at one point have said, you know, I know you love to build things, but building things requires a knowledge of math, and math just doesn't happen to be one of your skills. It's not something you're adept at, but you are very adept musically speaking. And so I would encourage you, instead of going into construction, to go into the field of music. Now, this might sound like a very caring and loving and constructive and supportive thing to say, but what may the child have heard? You're not very adept at math. And so for the rest of that child's life, he doesn't tackle things that require math and doesn't apply himself to be curious about the principles of math. And so he gets to be 45 years old, and whether or not the statement was true, he is not very skilled at math. So some of the definitions you have adopted from other sources, and some of the definitions you apply to yourself, are ones you made up along the way all by yourself. But you know what? There's no one that math can't be taught to if you have a teacher who's willing to take the time and find the way in which to express it that piques the curiosity of the student and gives him the impression that it's something he can comprehend. Then that student will let go of this definition and open himself up to the pleasure of finding that he's quite capable. Now, let's also get very clear on something else. It's really nice to be able to find someone to blame for your problems, someone other than yourself. And so to say, well, my problems were caused by the ignorance of my parents, and they're telling me in all helpfulness what I couldn't do and what I ought to do. Instead of saying that, you've got to remember something. Whenever someone says something to you, it's like, if you're a computer user, it's like having a program on your computer and an announcement comes out from the company who designed the program that there's an upgrade. And you can investigate the upgrade, you can get all the information on it. You can even download it so that you can use it temporarily to try it out. But there comes a point where in order for you to have it as your own, you must what? Endorse it. You must give it your endorsement and register it and perhaps pay for it. At this point, in effect, it goes on your hard drive. And the fact that you have put it on your hard drive and you've kept it on your hard drive is nobody else's fault. You can't blame anyone else for it. So if your parents have said you're not very good at math, or you're not very good at this, or you really will never be very good at social interactions, you're a misfit. If you're operating on the basis of that, it's not because they said it. It's because at some point you endorsed it. And you, by your own determination, incorporated it as a result of your decision. And the simple fact is that no matter where your definitions came from, they still constitute false gods. They still constitute likenesses applied to something that is utterly whole, something that is utterly complete. You or your brother or anything you see in your world. And waking up is a matter of abandoning the definitions, no matter where they came from. And some of the definitions you will have to abandon will require you, first of all, to let go of the pleasure you get at blaming someone else for your having the problems you're having. All problems are the evidence of having applied a definition on top of the presence of God, on top of creation itself, and honoring that definition and thus obscuring creation. And by obscuring creation and refusing to see it because you value the definition you have made up more than what it really is, you neglect to recognize God there, which is your God-given function and is the part you play in co-creation. Let's go into the book. The subject heading is projection versus extension. You have made by projection, but God has created by extension. The Course speaks often about making as opposed to creating. And the easiest and simplest way to grasp the meaning of that is that you apparently practice authority by applying a definition to something. You make up the meaning for that thing which was fully expressed by God in the first place. So, after you have made up your definitions, just a moment, you must arrive at a point where you unmake them. You have made by projection, but God has created by extension. The cornerstone of God's creation is you. What is a cornerstone? It's not only the starting point of a building, but it's also a repository of the meaning of what is being created. You are the cornerstone of God's creation because, in effect, you are that which completes it by embodying it. And you embody it by recognizing it for what it is. You, for lack of better words, are God recognizing himself in his creations. You're that inseparable from the movement of creation and that inseparable from God. The cornerstone of God's creation is you, for his thought system is light. Remember the rays that are there unseen. Meaning, unseen while you are covering them over with your definitions. The more you approach the center of his thought system, God's, the clearer the light becomes. Or you could say, the more illuminated you are. The more illuminated by truth you are. The closer you come to the ego's thought system, the darker and more obscure becomes the way. Yet even the little spark in your mind is enough to lighten it. Bring this light fearlessly with you and hold it up to the foundation of the ego's thought system bravely. Be willing to judge it with perfect honesty. Open the dark cornerstone of terror. In other words, the cornerstone of the ego. Open the dark cornerstone of terror on which it rests and bring it out into the light. There you will see that it rests on meaninglessness and that everything of which you have been afraid was based on nothing. My brother, you are part of God and part of me. When you have at last looked at the ego's foundation without shrinking, you will also have looked upon ours meaning our foundation. Okay. How many of you remember last week, from last week, what we described as the cornerstone, as the thing that you have hidden away out of sight, which is the cornerstone of the ego's frame of reference? I'm not going to make you answer that in front of everyone. But remember that the cornerstone of the ego is, which you keep secret, keep hidden away even from yourself, is that of yourself you can do nothing. That's the bad news. It happens to be the glorious truth, but you have taken it as a challenge, not as a statement of fact. You have taken it as something to disprove. And you said, yes, I can. And being or existence for you has become nothing more than attempting to come to the point where you have successfully authorized something and you have managed to get your other dreaming brothers and sisters to agree with you. It's insulting. It's humiliating. It's the most awful thing in the world to arrive at the realization that you of yourself can do nothing. You avoid it at all cost. Why? Because it leaves you feeling powerless. And if you are powerless, it means that you are helpless and vulnerable. But you must come to that awareness without resisting it. You must come to that point of awareness with a willingness to embrace it. If you are to get out of the crab barrel, if you are to escape the bondage to all of the ignorance that follows the false premise that you of yourself can do something. You see, when you have at last looked at the ego's foundation without shrinking, you will also have looked upon ours. You see, when you're willing to look at the fact, not just intellectually, but I'm going to say with commitment, when you're willing to look at the fact that you of yourself can do nothing, and yet you exist. Even if you of yourself can do nothing, you still exist. You are still experiencing being. It means that you, because of something else, exist. You, because of something else, can act. Aha, that is the cornerstone of the Father's thought system. I, with my Father, can do all things, you see? That's what the words, I, of myself, can do nothing, really means. It says, because you still find yourself existing, then you, because of the Father, because of your Father, because of what your inheritance is, because of what your birthright is, by virtue of what your Father is, can do all things. You see? that you must be willing to go into that dark, hidden place where you've covered up the realization that you of yourself can do nothing, and there's nothing to be done about it. And abide with that, I said, with commitment, meaning without any desire to change that fact in any way, shape, or form. So, again, because it's important, when you have at last looked at the ego's foundation without shrinking, you will also have looked upon ours. I come to you from our Father to offer you everything again. Do not refuse it in order to keep a dark cornerstone hidden, for its protection will not save you. I give you the lamp, and I will go with you. You will not take this journey alone. I will lead you to your true Father, who hath need of you, as I have. Well, what does that mean? I will lead you to your true Father. It means that I will lead you to the place in your conscious awareness where you are able to look at a thing and see God there instead of your definition. It doesn't mean I'll lead you to a man in the sky with a long white beard, but I will take you to the evidence of creation and help you to see it for what it is. The ongoing, ever-present act of God being the movement of creation in all of its glory, so that you are seeing it, experiencing it, feeling it in all of its glory, and standing in awe of it with the inescapable realization that what you're experiencing is God and not what you had thought it was. And not only that, you seeing it as God is a God-given capacity that is your nature and your function, so that your seeing it for what it is part and parcel of the experience of the godness of everything, including yourself. Will you not answer the call of love with joy? No. Your habits are still too delicious to you. It's still too easy to apply a snap judgment. Something happens and out of your mouth comes, "She's a difficult one to deal with." Or, "He just won't shut up. He's so insensitive." You just love to make those pronouncements. You just love to apply those definitions because they express some part of your capacity to see things uniquely, different from everyone else. And that builds up your sense of yourself as an authorizer. And then if you can get enough other people to agree with you that he's very insensitive, or she's really difficult to deal with, then you become a force for changing public opinion and creating group consensus. And of course, group consensus is power, isn't it? Wow. So will you not answer the call of love with joy? Not really. So you've got to be alert. You've got to be willing to watch what you're doing with your mind and bite your mind's tongue when it wants to come up with a judgment, and then when it wants to get others to join you in seeing what you mean, so that there's group consensus, mutually agreed upon definitions. You see? Remember, every decision you make determines who you are choosing your father to be. God, or your capacity, your so-called capacity to create yourself and be equal to God. Now, you're not all ignorant. We've been together too long. And so, as it says here, you have learned your need of healing. Would you bring anything else to the sonship, meaning your need for healing? Well, it is humiliating. The ego says you're supposed to be self-sufficient and without need, except of yourself you can do nothing, so you need help. You need a father. You need a source. You're like a toaster with a plug that's not plugged into anything. You need to get plugged back in. Oh, gee, the toaster says, do I really have to be plugged into that socket? There must be a way for me to fulfill my function of browning that bread without having to do that. Yeah. You need to acknowledge your need. You need to acknowledge that of yourself, you have no existence, so to speak. You have no capacity to be something. But when you plug into the source, you have the capacity to be everything, because nothing that God is has been withheld from you in his self-expression. So, you have learned your need of healing. Would you bring anything else to the sonship, recognizing your need of healing for yourself? For in this lies the beginning of knowledge. It's likewise not just approaching your brothers and sisters or the brotherhood itself with your need, acknowledging that you need every single one of them. Bring your need to God. You've got to recognize, you've got to come to a point where you're willing to re-embrace God and annul the divorce you got. And invite God back in. Why? So that you can have the experience of God, but also, and not feel so lonely, but also so that in having the experience of God, you say, ah, a little bit of awe, oh, and you recognize and acknowledge God as God. You recognize and acknowledge your brother or that thing or the other thing as the presence of God. Awesome. And in that recognition, take your part in co-creation and fulfill your function and come back into the fullness of your being. Would you bring anything else to the sonship? Recognizing your need of healing for yourself, for in this lies the beginning of knowledge, or as you know, I would say knowing with a capital K, the foundation on which God will help you build again the thought system which you share with him. Not one stone you place upon it, but will be blessed by him. For you will be restoring the holy dwelling place of his Son, meaning you, where he wills his Son to be, and where he is. Again, you're neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You're at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. continuing, in whatever part of the mind of God's Son you restore this reality, you restore it to yourself. If you are engaged in restoring that awareness to your brother, for your brother, you restore it to yourself as well. Because what are you doing when you're looking at your brother engaged in restoring it to him? You are saying, I'm willing, I'm unwilling to do anything less than see the presence of God there. I will persist in seeing the presence of God there in spite of my habitual inclination to see my best, what I think is my best definition. In whatever part of the mind of God's Son you restore this reality, you restore it to yourself. What you give, you get to keep. For you dwell in the mind of God with your brother, for God himself did not will to be alone. To be alone is to be separated from infinity. But how can this be if infinity has no end? No one can be beyond the limitless, because what has no limits must be everywhere. Again, we're talking about the singularity of God. There's no outside to infinite unity. There are no beginnings and no endings in God, whose universe is himself. Can you exclude yourself from the universe or from God who is the universe? No. I'm adding that. No. I and my Father are one. Now, that's a statement you're all familiar with if you've read the Bible much. I and my Father are one. But listen, I and my Father are one with you, for you are part of us. Do you really believe that part of God can be missing or lost to him? If you were not part of God, his will would not be unified. There wouldn't be a singularity. Is this conceivable? Can part of his mind contain nothing? You know, when you got this bill of divorcement, was there suddenly a void in the middle of God where you had been? A black hole, an emptiness, a nothingness? If your place in his mind cannot be filled by anyone except you, and your filling it was your creation, without you, there would be an empty place in God's mind. Now, see, try to keep all of this out of the realm of theories and ideas. If there can't be an empty place in God's mind, then there isn't an empty place in God's mind where you were, which means that you are still there. Right now, today, as each of you sit there paying attention, it's happening in the mind of God. You, as God created you, not as you have come to define yourselves to yourselves, are unchanged from what God set in place as you. And that's why you must begin to consider yourself, apprehend yourself at the point of perfection. Because as long as you see yourself as far off from the point of perfection, working toward it, that will be the definition applied on top of the you that is already home and blind you to the truth about you that you're already home, and make it seem as though it is going to take time to get there. I remember last week I also mentioned that the moment you began to want to have a different perspective on creation, one of your own, and so you began to apply a little torque to it, that act of resistance to what you are and what your function is, and whatever the thing is that you were applying torque to, will cause you to seem to be moving away from it, or by reverse, that it will be moving away from you, such as in the expanding universe theory, where everything you look at is moving away from you, no matter where you might be in the universe. And as a result, when you look out at the universe, you're seeing the past. Even though creation is the now conscious experience of being, that act of resistance causes a sense of time to come into play. So you're pulling back, you're slowing down, you're moving at odds with the movement itself, which is timeless. And so you create a sensation of time for yourselves. Extension, meaning the movement of creation, cannot be blocked, and it has no voids. It continues forever, however much it is denied. Your denial of its reality arrests it in time. In other words, as a sensation you're experiencing, a false sensation you're experiencing, but not in eternity, which is another way of saying not in actuality. That is why your creations have not ceased to be extended, and why so much is waiting for your return. Reality hasn't stopped just because you've said, time out, which really meant time in, and you gave yourself an experience of time, which means that you've given yourself the experience of watching the movement of creation move away from you and be unavailable to you, even though it continues to be the only thing really going on. Waiting is possible only in time, but time has no meaning. You who made delay, do you see now how it is you made delay? By resisting the movement and causing this artificial sensation of time right in the middle of eternity. You who made delay can leave time behind simply by recognizing that neither beginnings nor endings were created by the eternal, who placed no limits on his creation, nor upon those who create like him. You do not know this simply because you have tried to limit what he created. And how did you try to limit it? By applying a different interpretation, by creating a definition and applying the definition like a tail on a donkey to some aspect of what God was being. And so, you believe that all creation is limited. You see? Whatever bias you apply to one, any small part of creation, is going to get equally applied to all parts of creation. As far as your perception is concerned, if you're wearing glasses and you put a waver, you grind the glass so that it refracts light differently, then everywhere you look, you will see what you're looking at affected by that waver. How you have determined things are is the way reality will be distorted for you, all of reality. You cannot have a selective distortion. That's why you feel vulnerable in one way or another under all circumstances. That's why you don't feel invulnerable ever. And yet invulnerability is your birthright. So, how then could you know your creations, having denied infinity? You're still the Christ, even though you're saying, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm a human being, enjoying the struggle of survival, and relishing the opportunity of overcoming the odds. That's what I am. And I'm enjoying it too damn much to take the easy road out, you know, where it's just all given to me. Continuing, the laws of the universe do not permit contradiction. What holds for God holds for you. If you believe you are absent from God, you will believe that He is absent from you. But the fact is, continuing, infinity is meaningless without you, and you are meaningless without God. There is no end to God and His Son, for we are the universe. Universe, all turned into one. All turned into one. One being all. The conscious experience of being. The infinite conscious experience of being. In which all exists infinitely. God is not incomplete, and He is not childless. I'm sorry. You may think that you got a divorce from Him and that you are now on your own. But you cannot be an orphan. And the Father cannot be childless. The singularity disallows it. What creation is disallows for what creation isn't. God is not incomplete, and He is not childless. Because He did not will to be alone, He created a son like Himself. Duh. What other materials did He have to make a son out of other than Himself? Of course He created a son like Himself. The son is the extension of Him. Do not deny Him His Son. For your unwillingness to accept His fatherhood has denied you yours. What does that mean? It's denied you the capacity to see the creations you have been being even while you have insisted that you are divorced from the Father and are an orphan who is having the time of his life attempting to succeed at being an independent authority just like God. Again, do not deny him his son. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 words. And those 6 words are the undoing of the dream. If you would do what those words said, you would wake up. Do not deny him his son. For your unwillingness to accept his fatherhood has denied you yours. See his creations as his son. Abandon your definition of the bitch next door. Abandon your definition of the insensitive guy down the street. And look to see God there. See his creations as his son. Wow. And what would that mean? Again, it would mean that you're fulfilling your function again, your divine function. The only thing you exist for, to see God and to acknowledge God for what God is right there. The glory of what your brother is, when it dawns upon you, will uncover the glory of you to you, which you'll also have to be willing to acknowledge and value and appreciate and enjoy. It constitutes coming back into your right mind. See his creations as his son, his offspring, his expression, his self-expression. See his creations as his son, for yours were created in honor of him. When you look at anything and you see God there, you let yourself have the experience of its awesome, awesome Godness, for lack of better words, are being the other half of creation, the co-creator, the one fulfilling his or her function of recognizing and acknowledging God there, glorifying God right there. Because that's more meaningful to you than any definition you might ever have come up with. That recognition is your creation. That willingness to see the presence of God where the bitch next door had been seen a moment ago is the gift you give that honors God and constitutes your creation. See his creations as his son, for yours were created in honor of him. The universe of love does not stop because you do not see it, and your closed eyes have not lost the ability to see. Look upon the glory of his creation, and you will learn what God has kept for you. Is it really so important to see what's wrong with your brother or sister so you can't be hurt by him? Is self-protection so important, so essential, that you cannot dare to trust anything or anyone where you must constantly be on the alert and on guard for something your brother might do? Well, it seems reasonable. It does seem reasonable when you look around. But you see, you're stuck out there in appearances, and you're not asking, what am I doing? How am I using my mind? Why am I feeling vulnerable? Why is a feeling of vulnerability present? Is it because my neighbor is undependable and untrustworthy? Or might it be for another reason? Might it be because I have chosen to be an independent agent, and therefore I'm engaged in actively denying my source, and in effect I'm trying to brown toast when I'm not plugged in, and the elements in the toaster can't get red, and I'm trying to do something that's impossible, and I'm trying to do it without having any innate intelligent realization that I'm trying to do something impossible, and that trying to do something impossible is not part of my nature. Am I feeling uncomfortable because my sanity is telling me that I'm trying to exist in a frame of mind that has a false premise, and therefore means that everything that is based upon that false premise and follows it is going to be equally wrong? Do I really need to be on guard against my neighbor? And do I really need to treat him as though he's untrustworthy and let him know that he's not untrustworthy in my eyes? Because there's no way for me to treat him as though he's not trustworthy without conveying it in some way to him and making him feel uncomfortable. You see? And the answer lies in the fact that your feeling of vulnerability that seems to call for wary alertness lies in the fact that you are trying to function in a disconnected way from your source that disallows you from experiencing your birthright, one aspect of which is invulnerability, because being is a singularity, which means it is without conflict. Again, the universe of love does not stop because you do not see it, and your closed eyes have not lost the ability to see. See, everything's still at the point of perfection, and reality's only an eyelid away. All it requires you to do is to open up your eyes, but opening up your eyes means you've got to be willing to abandon your love affair with your definitions and your so-called capacity to make them up and make commitment to them and thus cause you not to see reality. Look upon the glory of His creation. Whose creation? His creation. Look upon the glory of His creation. Acknowledge and recognize God there. And you once again fulfill your function and come back into your sanity. Look upon the glory of His creation and you will learn what God has kept for you. Well, one of the things He kept for you was you, unaltered by your temporary wish to try to do the impossible. And who you are will be returned to you as your conscious experience. God had given you a place in His mind which is yours forever. Yet, you could keep it only by giving it as it was given you. Could you be alone there if it was given you because God did not will to be alone? God's mind cannot be lessened. It can only be increased, and everything he creates has the function of creating. Love does not limit, and what it creates is not limited. To give without limit is God's will for you, because only this can bring you the joy which is his and which he wills to share with you. Your love is as boundless as his. Why? Because it is his. The love you love with is God's. There is no little radical general store sitting just outside of infinity where you can go and get a radical black market packet of love with which to love. There's no place to go to find the ability to love outside of the presence of God or outside of the presence of what you are as God presencing himself right there where you are. But, gee, my love has to be special, doesn't it? The way I love my wife has to be different from the way Joe down the street loves his wife. Well, where are you going to go to get this little bit of different kind of love? And why would you want a different kind of love when the love that God is infinite and awesome, you see? Instead of trying to go and get a little bit better love from this ad in the newspaper or this ad in the Playboy magazine or whatever, you need to dare to take a deep breath and relax and let go of the definitions and look at your wife or whatever it might be with the desire to see what God is being there. In other words, inviting God in so that revelation can occur and you are put in the position of playing your part in co-creation by recognizing God there, experiencing God there, so that there is this spontaneous exclamation of pure recognition. That gift is the gift of God's love. In the recognition of God's love, bringing into play the singularity that causes the so-called independent you who's been struggling to get to the top of the barrel to give up the ghost, replaced by you with an unaltered and unbiased conscious experience of what is real. Now, the simple fact is that you have to rouse yourself from your dream. If you're intent upon your dream and I come and shake your shoulder, the sensation of your shoulder shaking, being shaken, will become incorporated into the dream. And the dream will go on. You must rouse yourself from the dream. You're already rousing because you're inquiring, because there is curiosity. But I cannot do it for you. I can only tell you why it's safe to rouse yourself. I can only tell you that in the process you may go through stages where nothing you see means anything, because now you're seeing everything minus the definitions you gave to it, and momentarily it seems as though they mean nothing, but you must abide there with the curiosity, the interest, the desire to know what they do mean, and inquiring of them to reveal themselves to you. Express your need to know. Don't busy yourself asserting knowledge that you make up. And I'm telling you that every ounce of commitment you bring to this, right here, right now, without waiting till after you die, will pay off, because here and now is the only place you're having a misperception of reality. Which means here is where reality confronts you. Here is where reality is in your face. And it doesn't matter how many people aren't doing it. It doesn't matter how many people think all of this is nonsense. It doesn't matter whether people dislike you, because you're rousing yourself from the dream. It doesn't matter how many people are distressed, because you won't play their game anymore. Peace on earth. Goodwill toward men. It's needed here. Why? Because in reality, that is what's going on. I know. You can think of so-and-so and so-and-so and another so-and-so and say, no way. The truth couldn't possibly be going on there. There you go. You just came up with a definition, a string of words that you can choose to honor and make commitment to and base your behavior upon. But it doesn't mean it's the truth. Oh, so-and-so has cancer on his arm. I can see it on, I saw it on his arm. Oh, it's there. And he's going to die from it, the doctor said. How on earth could you possibly get past that? How on earth could you get to the experience of healing that shows nothing there except perfection, unless you are willing to back up from that string of words and withdraw your commitment to them and insist upon finding God there? If there's anything going on there at all, it must be God, in spite of what I'm seeing. Else I couldn't have a false or untrue definition about it. There's an it that I have a definition about. And the it is God, and it's flawless. And I'm telling you, and I don't know why I would need to tell you, but I must tell you that healing is the inevitable evidence of greater and greater inner illumination of the truth. And there had better be evidences of healing that contradict the mutually agreed upon definitions that your gods, the doctors, and your fears have put into place. And I'm telling you that healing is possible right where it seems to be impossible. And I'm saying that right where there seem to be world leaders or terrorists or whatever it might be, right there, just as with the cancer, in spite of the appearance, God is being there. And here and now is where you need to cut through the definitions you've given to the appearances and your commitment to those definitions. You need to get past them. You need to say, Father, I've created some definitions here and I've made commitment to them, and they are beginning to scare me. They are beginning to make me think there is no alternative to life as hell. And I don't choose to go down this road any further. Father, help me see what you are being right there, where so-and-so, Christ so-and-so, is using his mind poorly. You are going to have to become more aggressive. Not aggressive against the bitch next door or the insensitive guy down the street or the irresponsible leader of a government. You don't have to become aggressive against them. You must become aggressive in your intent to get past the definitions you have in place that keep you from seeing God there and keep you from witnessing instantaneous healing that seems to have no objective justification. You can have the instantaneous evidence of wholeness because God has not created anything other than that. And your function has not changed from being that which has the capacity to recognize God there and acknowledge God there and experience with awe the goodness, the godness of God there, knowing that the mind you are seeing God with right there is God also. Remember, it all boils down to something rather simple: projection or extension. Either you are going to project a definition you have made up or one that you have endorsed and adopted out there on your world, which is a loveless act, an empty act that doesn't actually accomplish anything at all except an ongoing experience of distress for you. There's either that choice or there's the choice of extension. Extension meaning what? Your willingness to give something. Your willingness to give your attention to the presence of God that has to be there with more commitment than you have given to your definitions, with a desire to see the good that is there. That's an extension. That is an act of care, not an act of caring for a poor, awful, misguided this, that, or the other thing, but a love for what has to be there behind the definition that's been applied to it, underneath the definition that's been applied to it. You make that gift of the desire to see it, no matter what seems to be going on. You invite in the experience of God there, of good there. That's extension. You see? Oh, you say, well, projection, extension, you know, projection, I'm giving, you know, I'm plastering my definition right over their face. You know, I'm giving something. And I'm giving them the best definition I can come up with. They ought to be grateful. That's not a gift. That's a demand. That's a taking away of something. It's insisting upon a lesser experience than the God presence that's there. Projection is when you apply not only something that's not wanted, but something that isn't even real on top of something that's real. That is projection. Now, this week, pay attention and watch how many times you project a hateful thought. Watch how many times you project a thought onto somebody, a cute little sneaky and mean definition. Watch it so that you may withdraw it immediately, because it's that empty act that keeps you from seeing God, glorifying God, and experiencing instantaneous healings of situations. It keeps you in a constant state of vulnerability, because you're trying to make toast without being plugged in, and you are delaying, you are creating this sense of time, you are delaying your peace and your joy, you are holding your good at arm's length. So, with that, I will say good night for tonight, and I look forward to being with you next week. You know, it could sound like I've said a lot of things that you should feel bad about, but no, you know, you can. Use your mind poorly, and you can use your mind well. When you're using your mind poorly, you're doing nothing. And when you're using your mind well, you're co-creating with God. So, although it will be an uncomfortable experience when you're using your mind poorly, rather than applying another definition of judgment against yourself, just see that, well, you can do things this way and it doesn't feel good, and you can do things another way and at least Raj says it will feel better. I can do it this way or I can do it that way. And so, you know what, I'm going to apply myself a little bit to doing it a different way this week. You see, just realize you can do it and be uncomfortable, or you can try something that will lead to everything and more that you had been striving for all by yourself. Okay.